now more than ever, people need to go within and plug into that cellular memory, plug into divine source, detach as much as possible from the matrix. A lot of these people that have all these abilities, who have celestial star ancestry, they're operating not only throughout this cosmos, but in higher planes, and they're working against the Draco Empire. The photonic energy and the cosmic rays will activate our higher centers. And it's incumbent upon us to ride that frequency wave. Hello again, everybody. This is James Bartley, and you are listening to the Cosmic Switchboard Show. Today, we are starting a new feature on the Cosmic Switchboard. That is a dialogue between myself and my colleague, Dean, also known as Wolfhawk. Those of you that are regular members and subscribers and other people that contacted us, Dean is the individual who basically administers the website and responds to technical queries and the like. So I'd like to introduce Dean, also known as Wolfhawk, to you. Dean, how are you?
I'm good. How are you, James?
I'm doing fine. I'm really looking forward to these discussions now and moving forward because Dean is an extremely well-read individual. He's done a lot of his own research. He's a very sharp individual. He's very good at retaining information and breaking it down to its most basic levels. Before we get started, Dean and I would like to thank our listeners for being supportive of us, for being patient despite all the technical issues we've had to put up with, all the attacks on the website, the interference, the things that have been done to prevent people even from signing up. And we really want to express our appreciation to all of you for sticking with us. The best of the Cosmic Switchboard is yet to come. We're going to expand our work. We're going to be moving more into video work. We're going to be doing more video interviews, field investigations, and webinar panels, etc., etc. So we want to thank you. And Dean, did you want to say anything?
Yeah, without our listeners, it would be impossible to do this. With your support, we're able to get in equipment that's going to help us produce better quality interviews. We're able to hire servers that can withstand the attacks. And I really appreciate your support. Also, any kind of feedback about the website, about the interview content, we'd really appreciate that because we really get very little feedback.
Yes, we really would appreciate any feedback. And some of our listeners are also our colleagues, and they are investigators and researchers in their own right, and they've contributed articles, people like Carol Solage, Poppy Joy. We're coming out this week with a great article written by someone who's a survivor of various mind control projects. It's an article about dissociation and what he's learned to do over the years to put him in a good place mentally, physically, emotionally, spiritually. And so we feel that our show is very much community-driven insofar as we don't see ourselves as being these big-shot podcasters who, you know, we have our audience, but we are somehow above and apart from our audience. So we feel that our audience is us and we are our audience, and that we feel that there's this synergy that passes between us and our audience, that there's this meaningful feedback we get. We get a lot of feedback, people telling us how they like the shows and whatnot, but we'd like, you know, more feedback, what you'd like to see more of, what kind of content you're interested in, what kind of areas we should explore, whatever the case may be. This is an interactive process, and we want to encourage you also to go onto our forum, which is heavily monitored, by the way. This way, you know, trolls don't even get off the starting line. But we encourage our members and our listeners to go on there. There's a variety of subjects to choose from, surface level stuff, New World Order stuff, but also health, nutrition, et cetera, et cetera. So I just want to emphasize that point, that we really feel a connection to our listeners, and we could not be doing what we're doing without our listeners. We're going to be talking today, Dean and I, about aspects of nutrition, of diet, of longevity, and we want to emphasize, and Dean, you can elaborate on this as well, that the information we're providing to you is for informational purposes only. It is incumbent upon you, the listeners, to take this information, do your own research, and make up your own minds about it. Dean, did you want to add something to that?
I did. I wanted you guys to take the information, do your own research. Don't just take what I'm saying and do it yourself, because I'm not going over how often to take it, how much to take, side effects, stuff like that. So this is basically to give you information to do your own research, and then if you like it from your own research, then go out and use it. But don't just use it without doing your own research.
And a necessary, like, prerequisite to deciding on what supplements to research and what plants to research, what have you, is a basic understanding of the human physiology of genetics. And I learned this from you, is the critical importance of telomeres. Can you tell our listeners what telomeres are and how our telomeres differ from animals?
Yeah, basically on the end of our DNA we have things called telomeres, which protect the DNA when it divides. In humans, each time the DNA divides, the telomeres get shorter and shorter and shorter until we reach something called the Hayflick limit, which causes the cells to die and us to die. In animals, they have an enzyme called telomerase, which will lengthen the telomeres each time, so it keeps the telomeres long and they don't have problems with shortening telomeres or diseases caused from short telomeres or things like that.
And the telomeres have something to do with longevity as far as lifespan is concerned?
Right. After so many cell divisions and there's no telomeres left, you basically reach something called the Hayflick limit, and your cells basically die. When you get close to that, short telomeres can signal the cells to cause all kinds of diseases and bad kinds of things. So you want to keep your telomeres long if you can do that.
What can one do to lengthen the telomeres and ensure that they last as long as they need to?
Well, there are certain supplements that you can take. There's some expensive supplements you can buy, but I would really recommend the plant-based supplements. The most common one that people talk about to lengthen your telomeres is astragalus root, and a lot of research has shown that it does actually lengthen your telomeres. Another one that you can take that lengthens your telomeres is goat cola. If you take the plant-based supplements rather than the ones that are refined from plants, you get the added benefits of those, like the astragalus root has benefits for your immune system, it can benefit your energy, the goat cola can benefit circulation, your brain, and stuff like that. So I would really recommend taking astragalus root and or goat cola.
Animals seem to have the ability to sustain their telomeres. Do you feel that there has been some kind of genetic intervention that's taken place? Because we read some of these old accounts, even in the Old Testament, but in other accounts, where humans in ancient times seem to have quite long lifespans. And there are still some cultures around the world today where it's not unusual for people to live, you know, 90, 100 years old and still have a high quality of life. Do you feel that somewhere along the line, the telomeres have been altered or somehow messed with?
Well, it looks like human DNA has been messed with one way or another. There's a lot of genes that animals have that are beneficial that humans don't have, like the telomere gene that lengthens your telomeres, and also a gene that produces vitamin C. Another gene that animals have that humans don't have is a gene that will get rid of uric acid in your body, which causes gout, so they don't have to deal with that. And also, when I say a gene, it could be for example, the telomere gene, we have that, it's just not active. The gene that produces vitamin C, we have that, but it's been degraded. So we may have some of these genes, but they're either inactive or degraded or no longer work because of something that happened to us. And if we buy the argument that we evolved from monkeys, we should have these genes active in our DNA and our body should be using them, but they're not.
That's a good point. And the point you just made, animals, they produce their own vitamin C, is that correct?
That is correct. When an animal is under stress, they'll produce up to 50 grams of vitamin C. When we're sick or under stress, a doctor will recommend us to maybe have 100 milligrams of vitamin C, even though we can't produce our own. So somewhere along the line, we've lost our ability to produce vitamin C.
And there are two types generally of commercially available vitamin C, and the one that is most commonly associated in the minds of the users as vitamin C is actually the wrong type to buy. Could you elaborate on that?
Yes, you don't want to get ascorbic acid. That's just a fraction of vitamin C, and the ascorbic acid that you get in the stores is usually derived from petroleum. So it's not going to help you in the long term. What you want to do is you want to get the food-based form of vitamin C because that has all the fractions and it's not made from petroleum and it's not going to make you sick. One time I took a high dosage of the ascorbic acid and I got pretty sick from it. I took a high dosage of Camu Camu, which is a natural form of vitamin C, which had the similar amount of vitamin C. And the only side effects I had from that was increased health, increased endurance, better hair and skin. So I highly recommend that you take the natural form of vitamin C and not the artificial form.
What other natural sources of vitamin C are there?
Another good natural source of vitamin C is pine needles, because pine needles you can get pretty much any country for free. And when you get the pine needles, you don't have to pay a huge price that's pretty expensive for your vitamin C.
How would one prepare vitamin C to make it most conducive to, you know, bringing out the vitamin C content?
With the pine needles, what you'd want to do is just cut off the sharp end of the pine needle and either chew the pine needles or you could make a tea, but you don't want to make the water too hot or it's going to destroy the vitamin C. With the Camu Camu, you could either eat the Camu Camu directly or you could put it in a smoothie or put it in a drink or have it with some water.
Another subject that is of importance is the concept of DNA methylation. Can you tell our listeners what DNA methylation is?
Yes, basically what your body does, it uses DNA methylation to turn on and off genes. What happens is we've got a bunch of good DNA and a bunch of bad DNA from viruses that have gotten into our DNA. So what our body will do, it will either attach or not attach methyl groups to turn genes on and off.
And what does diet have to do as far as DNA methylation is concerned and methyl groups is concerned? How does one's eating habits factor into all this?
When you eat the wrong type of food, you lose more methyl groups than when you eat the right type of food. When you eat a cooked food meal, you lose about 1,800 methyl groups. When you eat a raw food meal, you lose about 1,200 methyl groups. So you're going to lose a lot more methyl groups if you're eating cooked food versus raw food.
What, again, does DNA methylation apply to. It has something to do with activating certain genes and keeping bad genes deactivated. Is that how it works?
Right. What happens is if you've got enough methyl groups from your diet, then you're going to be able to suppress a lot of the bad genes and activate a lot of the good genes. When you run out of methyl groups, what happens, then your body can no longer suppress the bad genes and it will activate, and then it won't activate the good genes. Now, there's other things that can cause the genes to be methylated as well. For example, if you're low on magnesium, you're going to express a lot of bad genes and not express a lot of good genes. So there's other things besides just methyl groups that can influence that. But a big problem that people have when they get older is they run out of methyl groups and they get a whole host of diseases because of that.
What can people in general do besides take magnesium? Is there certain food groups that would tend to aid in this DNA methylation process?
Well, there's definitely stuff you can do, but what I would recommend is if you're over 30, start taking betaine hydrochloride because that has the methyl groups in it. The betaine is actually trimethylglycine, which provides you 3 methyl groups for every molecule. And the hydrochloride provides you with a stomach acid supplement because what happens is as you get older, if you don't take a supplement for stomach acid when you eat cooked food, the food will rot as it goes through your digestion and it causes a lot of problems, including heartburn. And then what most people do is go out and take an antacid, which will neutralize all the acid in your stomach and it will allow the bad stuff to grow and cause you a lot of problems.
So taking an antacid, then really it's not a good idea because it, in typical pharmaceutical fashion, it wipes everything out, not just what it's intended to do.
Right, the antacid basically neutralizes all the acid in your stomach. So when you take the antacid, your stomach acid that would normally kill the bad viruses and bacteria is no longer there. So the bad viruses and bacteria can get into your body, take up hold in organs such as your pancreas and cause diabetes, or it can take up hold in other organs and cause all kinds of problems. So you never want to take an antacid. If you have heartburn, you want to take a stomach acid supplement such as betaine hydrochloride so you don't neutralize the acid.
Many of my listeners are what we call MILABs, military abductees. These are people that have legitimate alien abduction experiences, but on occasion, and sometimes quite frequently depending on the individual, these alien abductees are at times taken by deep black elements of the military and utilized in a number of ways, covert operations, training, all kinds of medical experimentation, and behavior modification is perpetrated upon them. And what many MILABs describe is waking up after having a whole night of experiences and feeling like they've just run a marathon or feeling like they've been run over by a herd of hippos. Their thighs are aching, their body is stiff. It feels like they've really been run through the mill. For what would a MILAB need to do in order to overcome these side effects from these experiences?
Well, I don't know if you can completely overcome all the side effects, but there's a lot of things you can do that can help you. Like, for example, a lot of MILABs get injected with stuff that's poisonous or makes them sick, so they want to take a calcium bentonite supplement. And what that will do, that will pull that out of their body so it doesn't get absorbed. Some other things that would really help MILABs is B vitamins, because when you're under stress, you lose a lot of B vitamins. So what happens is MILABs will be stressed out on a continual basis and run out of B vitamins, and they'll start manifesting all kinds of horrible diseases because of a lack of B vitamins. Another supplement that MILABs should take is magnesium, because when you don't sleep from these horrible experiences, your body loses a lot of magnesium. There's a lot of other stuff that we can get into later, but those are some excellent things that MILABs should take when they're having bad experiences and also on a regular basis.
So to recap, those three would be magnesium, the B vitamins, and what was the first one you mentioned, Dean?
It's calcium bentonite.
Calcium bentonite, and that's in order to draw out whatever kind of weird toxins they injected into people.
Right. Another one that I forgot to mention for that is vitamin C, because not only does that help the immune system, but a high dosage of vitamin C will also help against toxins.
And if one knows that they're being utilized in these experiences, but also as far as everyday living is concerned, we all want to have like mental clarity, we all want to have endurance, stamina, etc. What are some of the things that people can do, especially my labs, in order to help in all those areas?
Well, the number one most important thing is your sleep and your water. If you're not getting proper sleep, then you're not going to have good health. I can give you a shopping cart full of vitamins and it's not going to help you. What you need to make sure to do to get a proper sleep is to have proper digestion, meaning you don't want to eat for a few hours before you sleep. If you're older than 30, you want to take some digestive supplements. And you also want to make sure that you're not drinking a lot of water before you sleep, because then you're going to be waking up during the night and you're not getting a proper amount of sleep. If you're getting good sleep, you want to make sure you get enough water, because if you don't get enough water, you're going to damage your kidneys, you're not going to be able to get the toxins out of your body, and your mind's going to be foggy. For the water, you want to have half your body weight in ounces of water. So if you weigh 160 pounds, you want to have 80 ounces of water, which would be 10 8-ounce cups of water a day. Another thing that you can do is to make sure you don't get toxins in your diet. Like, you don't want to be eating food full of free glutamate, such as like MSG or autolyzed yeast extract or any of the other hidden names for MSG. The toxins are going to cloud up your mind, going to damage your immune system. It's going to just make your life miserable. So you want to get the toxins out of your diet.
Before talking about the importance of sourcing one's produce from proper places, can you tell the listeners a bit about what exactly goes into industrial farming methods, the role that phosphates play, for example, and what it does to the environment and how it eradicates certain beneficial fungi, for example?
Yeah, let me just start in case somebody listening doesn't know. Traditionally, what would happen is when people would grow crops, they'd rotate their crops with different crops. So if one crop pulled out a lot of nitrogen, the next crop that would be in that area would put the nitrogen back in, and they'd also let the land rest. Now what they do, they don't rotate their crops, and they just throw chemical-based fertilizer on it. So what happens is the plants will grow, and they'll look good, but they'll be missing a lot of nutrients that you need for your health, because the plants will grow without them, but you won't.
Could you describe to the listeners the petrochemical agent, if you will, phosphate, and the influence it has on the environment and on and in the food cycle?
Yeah, what happens to get these fertilizers for the industrial produced foods is it starts from phosphate mining. And if you search online for pictures of phosphate mining, just the phosphate mining operation just devastates the environment. It produces a bunch of toxic byproducts. And then when you throw that stuff on the ground, you get unhealthy crops. So lots of bugs come in, they eat the unhealthy crops, because that's what their job is, they eat the unhealthy crops. If you have a healthy crop, the bugs aren't going to come and destroy your crops. So then what happens is the farmers need to throw a bunch of poison on them. So then not only are you devastating the environment where the phosphates are mined, you're devastating where the food's grown, and then the runoff devastates the surrounding environment. So now you've basically poisoned a huge amount of land to grow a small amount of crops. And on top of that, the crops that you're growing are not healthy, and they're full of chemicals and all kinds of stuff that's going to harm your health.
And in this process, the phosphates tends to eradicate certain beneficial flora and fauna, in particular a fungus that is necessary for the correct growth of vegetation. Is that the case?
As the phosphates themselves don't eradicate the beneficial fungus, it's the added pesticides that do it. And some of these pesticides, I don't like to mention brand names, but one of them I've got to mention is Roundup. Happens is Roundup goes in and it kills the beneficial bacteria and it leaves the bad ones intact. And when you eat that, it does that in your stomach. So first of all, you want to stay away from anything with Roundup. You don't want to have Roundup anywhere near your house. That's really bad stuff. What also happens is in these industrial processes, they kill off the beneficial fungi in the soil, the mycorrhiza fungi. And what the mycorrhiza do, they transport nutrients to the plants that are beneficial to the plants and beneficial to the people who eat plants. They've done studies where they found plants growing in the forest that they thought would have no way of growing because there's not enough sunlight, and they found that the mycorrhiza are transporting the nutrients to them. So the mycorrhiza are critical for growing healthy crops.
And this is a fungus that's in the soil.
Right. There's lots of different types of mycorrhiza fungus, but when you use the industrial farming processes, you kill all of them off.
Well, that's too bad. And as far as the whole concept of nutrition is concerned, the importance of going back to self-sufficient communities, of course, organic produce, correct farming methods is the way to go. And what we're going to do in a future edition of the Cosmic Switchboard, one of our guests will be talking about how to create self-sustaining farming communities and how to create organizations where proper organic food is provided at low cost. Can you talk a bit about the connection between organic farming on the one hand, nutrition and longevity and health?
Yeah, now when you say organic, you're probably talking about what you think of as organic, because now when you go into a store and you see organic, it's not really much better than the conventional. They've got a lot of exceptions. So what you want to do is you want to get good, high-quality food, and if you can grow it yourself or find it at a local farmer's market, that's the best way. The best way that I know of that you can tell is if you taste the food, like if you have an avocado, if it tastes delicious, it's got a good flavor, it's really creamy, that's a good avocado. A lot of times you'll go to the store, you'll get used to low quality food and you won't even realize that you're eating something bad.
Yes, unfortunately a lot of these large supermarket chains source their produce from subpar sources, basically.
Right, a lot of these supermarket chains get the produce from places where if you saw the way it was grown, you probably wouldn't want to eat it. And that's even more so for the meat and animal products that they sell you.
Now, what these industrial farming conglomerates do is, of course, they use a lot of pesticides in the farming methods. Now, what would a local farmer do if he sourced the proper produce, the proper seed? How would one go about ensuring that their crop isn't preyed upon by boll weevils or by bugs or by aphids or whatever the case may be?
Basically, if the crop's healthy enough, it's not going to get preyed upon by those bugs very often. Somebody taught me how to grow healthy crops and I was shocked because none of the bugs would touch it. If you want to grow your own crops, you want to also get a chlorine filter for your hose because the chlorine kills the beneficial mycorrhiza fungi in the soil. And you don't want to use any kind of chemical fertilizer for that.
Now, some people have turned over the years to obtaining natural means of eradicating pests when the pests do manifest, such as like praying mantises and whatnot. Now, is that something you would recommend for someone who's got a relatively small farm, or is that something that you'd only recommend if someone has like a number of acres that they're working with?
No, you can do it at any size. There's all kinds of things that can get rid of pests. Like, for example, if you have a problem with mice, instead of getting mice traps or poison or stuff like that, you can plant mint around the area, and the mice don't like that, so they won't go near that. If you have gophers, you can do a similar thing. You just put a cloth soaked with oil near their gopher hole. You don't need to kill them. You don't need to do anything. But the oil is so traumatic to them because they have no way of getting it off their coat that they'll actually leave the area because they see that. So there's a lot of different things that you can do to get rid of pests that aren't going to harm you. It won't harm them, and it won't harm the environment.
When you are looking for certain produce that's going to provide certain beneficial aspects to yourself and to your family, what are the key aspects you're looking for as far as, like, say, an immune boost? If one wants to grow foods that naturally provide an immune boost, would they start off with, like, the green cruciferous vegetables, or would that be just one of the certain kinds of plants, vegetables they would grow? If someone wanted strong, like, endurance or mental clarity or stamina or something, is there other foods and or supplements, because we're into supplements as well, what would you recommend as far as food groups, as far as supplements, for all those key areas, mental alertness, clarity of thinking, mental endurance, physical endurance, immune boost, etc.?
That's actually a tough question because everything goes together, so you can't have one supplement that does it, and you could be having one diet of the exact same food where you live, and then you could go to somewhere where it's grown pristinely and you'll get all those benefits on the exact same food. But some things that will help, for example, with immune boost, vitamin C will help you a lot. And of course, the natural form of vitamin C and a lot of it. If you're like sick and you need a quick immune boost to get rid of the sickness, you should take a high dosage of vitamin C. And a high dosage is as much as you can take. Like, it could be 4 ounces of Camu Camu, which sounds like a lot and is a lot, but it will get rid of your sickness really quickly. Another thing that's important for your immune system is vitamin D. Most people, even if they are in the sun, don't get enough vitamin D. And as you age, your skin gets less efficient at producing vitamin D, so you need to take a vitamin D supplement. Unless you're naked all day in the sun every day, then you may not need it. As far as endurance, that depends on what kinds of vitamins you're lacking and stuff like that. So that's a little bit tough to answer. But some things that can help with endurance are just the general health things that you'd normally need, such as the B vitamins, the nutrients, stuff like that. As far as mental clarity, the most important thing for mental clarity is getting toxins out of your body, because if you have toxins in your body or in your diet, that's going to fog up your mind extremely quickly. There's also adaptogenic herbs that can help with mental clarity, like gotu kola. That helps with mental clarity, as well as it helps with your telomeres and it helps with circulation, so that will help with mental clarity. Did you have any other questions about anything else?
Dean, is there something more than, like, the physical aspect behind all this? Because we know, like, in a lot of the Chinese medicine, that they look at the human being in a holistic sense, an energetic sense even. What energetic aspects should people keep in mind as far as health, longevity, et cetera, concern? Well, what are the energetic things that people need to keep in mind?
Well, we have to keep in mind that we're not just physical beings, we're also energetic beings. So, For example, when you get an injury, even though it may be healed, the injury memories still stay in your cells and cause problems with your health. And as time goes by, those problems get worse and worse and worse. Another thing to keep in mind is that it's not just what we eat that affects us. It's what we breathe in. It's who we have around us. People can transfer their experiences, their health issues, and we can pick them up subconsciously. We also want to be careful about the waves such as Wi-Fi, cell phones, any kind of electronic devices, electricity that we have around us, because some of these waves are really bad for our health. There's also devices that can produce very beneficial waves that we can use to help our health. We also need to make sure we're not stressed out, we're not depressed, because all of those things are going to affect our health just as much as the stuff we eat.
And as far as quality of life is concerned, what can our listeners do to enhance their quality of life? What are the things they need to cut out? What are the things they need to implement in order to enhance the quality of life?
Well, as far as diet for your quality of life, you definitely want to cut out white sugar and white flour, because if you have white sugar and white flour, it's going to destroy your health. Something that you should include is beans. There was a study done on all the long life cultures, and all the long life cultures had some things in common, and one of them was they included beans in their diet. That could be black beans, that could be red beans, that could be pinto beans, and you only need about an ounce or a little under an ounce a day, so you don't need a lot. But beans contain a lot of important things that we need in our body that help us detoxify from the smog, and they're also not very expensive, so I would highly recommend including beans in your diet. Another thing that's going to help you is people have basically evolved, or whatever you believe, basically are designed to use carbohydrates and complex carbohydrates. Primates such as monkeys have less genes in their DNA to digest carbohydrates, but humans have more. So we want to include complex carbohydrates like potatoes or things like that as our primary source of calories. We don't want to be using lots of simple sugars such as candy or too much dried fruit or stuff like that. If you're going to have sugars, you want to have them 8 hours after you get up. There was a study done on people who eat donuts, and what they found is they could eat the same amount of donuts, do the same amount of exercise, but if you eat the sugars when you first wake up, you're going to put on weight, have problems from the sugar, because when you first wake up, you're more insulin resistant than when 8 hours afterwards. So you want to eat the sweets later on in the day and not when you first wake up. Another thing that a lot of people leave out of their diet are the leafy greens. You should be eating leafy greens almost every single day because they're important to sustain the beneficial bacteria in your body. Another thing that you should be doing every day is to eat fermented foods such as sauerkraut, kefir, kimchi, any kind of fermented food each day, because that will really help your digestion. There's a lot of other stuff that we don't have time to get into, so if this is something that interests you, send us an email and we can do more on this subject or something else that interests you.
Well, thank you very much, Dean. This has been a very enlightening segment, and we're looking forward to do more of these segments. And is there anything else you want to say to our listeners before we conclude this segment?
I just wanted to reiterate that all of this information is to give you a starting place for research and not information that you should just take out and use without researching it, because if you do that, if I made a mistake or if somebody makes a mistake or anybody, you're going to have a big problem. So do your own research and make your own decision, because something that may work for me may not work for you.
Yes, definitely do your own research, folks. And you've been listening to a new aspect of our Cosmic Switchboard show, these dialogues with Dean, and we will continue to have these on a regular basis. Thank you for listening to us, and once again, thank you for all your support, our dear listeners, wherever you may be, whether it's daytime or nighttime. We hope you are having a pleasant time. Thank you.
Because this is a frequency war.